Emanating out of London and Los Angeles, you're listening to The People's Podcast on thingsdezsays.net. Also available on iTunes.
Also available on the wireless, if you so choose.
If you access your telegraph and head over to the Western Union office, you can listen to The People's Podcast. 1920s voices.
Yeah.
That's what this song reminds me of. This song was number one on the 1945 Top 40 chart.
You'd have to buy it on a gramophone.
This is Pop and Circumstance.
Yes.
This podcast is brought to you by Petroleum.
Which? British Petroleum, at that.
Petroleum, the very newest discovery by science.
The very newest petroleum.
Breakthrough, there you go. The very newest scientific breakthrough. Also brought to you by cigarettes, which are very good for you.
Yes. If you smoke 60, you need to smoke more.
Oh, man. It's going to be a fun show.
Imagine back
dude.
In the olden days, if they were doing wrestling carnivals, all the promoters were standing there with a cigar.
Yeah. This wrestling extravaganza. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
We got a great show for you today. Huge guest coming up in just a little bit. Nigel McGuinness is going to be on the show.
He's on his way.
He's on his way. He's talking about the LA Fights Kickstarter project, his newest pitch on how to revolutionize the wrestling world, or how to at least create a new alternative.
We discussed that, and we discussed other things. We talk about his career a little bit.
It's a very fun interview.
We talk about storyline, concussions and storylines.
That's right. It's a fun interview. I'm very proud of it. So hopefully you can stick around and listen to that. That's going to be good. But
it's in my top three interviews that we do. We've interviewed some great people. Rob, what's his name? Greg the Truth Lambert is one of my favorites.
Yeah, Greg was one of the best.
Great, but this is something very special.
Yeah, this is very fun. I enjoyed that. So hopefully you can stick around and listen to that. Something else that happened, though, breaking news. I'm glad I woke up early today. I woke up to this news today, which is great. Randy Savage, according to this very credible WWE text message alert.
It's not official, though.
It's not official, according to this text message, although it came from WWE. So I don't know how to make it. I don't know how more official it could possibly be, actually. But they say not official. But Randy Savage should be announced for the WWE Hall of Fame tonight on Raw.
And as I said on Twitter, it's about flipping time.
About flipping time. That's awesome, dude.
You know what? It's going to be interesting to induct him because there was one very obvious candidate this time last year.
Yeah, very clearly. He did his move and everything.
Yeah, and paid tribute to him as often as he possibly could.
So
he's not there anymore.
He's in another company right now, as I understand it.
Yes, but there is other people in this company who could do it, and you suggested one to me earlier in
I think it should be Stephanie.
Hall of Famer. No.
just to bring it back full circle.
Yeah. You could use two WWE Hall of Famers, I guess, in one that hates him and one that doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, you could use Hogan if you wanted to. Your idea was Lanny Poffo, which I think is the most likely.
Yes, I think that's the most likely and the most logical. Although, if you wanted to, you know, bring it to nostalgia and things like that, use Steamboat.
Yeah, you could use Ricky Steamboat. That would be also a great way to promote the match on the WWE Network.
Yes.
And also make it very nice and nostalgic, because it would make sense.
It would. Which begs a question. He's not going to headline, is he?
I don't know. If he's the first guy being announced, usually the first announcement is the headline.
Is the headline.
Yeah.
So it makes one wonder if Sting or the Deadman are going in this year.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if they do put Sting in and
put Sting in and him not headlining. I'm sorry, you can't do it.
But you know how WWE thinks. If he's not a WWE guy.
They put Foley and Sammartino on the same bill, so yeah.
If it's a WWE guy, then of course he would have to headline, but it's Sting. He was a WCW guy.
Yeah, but Savage left in such acrimonious circumstances that he is also, quote, a WCW guy, end quote.
No, but he has a history in WWE, and they can't ignore that.
And they probably will ignore it.
Are you kidding me? They have Hulk Hogan there. They have Steamboat there. They have so much history that they can play off of.
I know. And their agent Malenko's there.
Yeah.
Finley and all them.
You know, though, part of me, even though it is in his home state, part of me would hold off on putting Sting in this year? Because logically, it doesn't make sense.
if he's going to have a match, you mean?
Storyline wise, it doesn't make sense because Sting is feuding with Triple H. Why would the COO of the company, who is feuding with Sting, also put Sting in his Hall of Fame?
I guess. No. Fair enough. That's a fair point, but I just want to see Sting in the Hall of Fame. I want to personally see it.
I do too. Right. That would be really awesome. But not awesome was the non-entity that was Raw last Monday. All right.
Let me go on a bit of a rant here.
Go ahead.
Just a quick one. This is, as they always put it, the road to WrestleMania.
Yes.
Where they start building to the biggest angles of the year. In the last couple of years, we've had stuff like The Undertaker returning to confront Triple H, just as he was about to fire Laurinaitis, which is very fun.
Yes.
You had The Rock returning to start that and did that awesome promo with CM Punk. All these things. And in the past, go back to 2010, you had Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker starting their feud around TLC time for the 26 match, correct?
That's right, yeah.
This year, nothing. Literally nothing. Even last year, they had the Daniel Bryan thing going on, so they had something at least. This year, it's nothing. Nothing's been built. No lead to the Royal Rumble. They announced that for some reason Seth Rollins is in the main event of the Royal Rumble. Why?
Maybe to add spice to the main event.
Honestly,
I think we both know why. They're trying to tell the story here, and they don't want to pin Cena, and they don't want to pin Brock.
Yes, so they're just setting exactly. Now, the only way this could work, is if Rollins cashes in afterwards, either way.
Yes.
It's the only way this story is going to work.
Well, here's where things are going to happen. I think, and we talked about this last week, I think Cena beats Brock in a valiant manner, and then, Cena pins Rollins, and then he's celebrating, and then Rollins attacks him with the briefcase, cashes in, and then pins him. So they basically...
Which leaves Brock Lesnar strong.
Exactly. Leaves Brock strong. Maybe even Brock kills Cena after the match.
Yes.
Or, what somebody else suggested, if you still want to do Rusev versus Cena at Mania...
Is that what they're planning?
That's an idea. That is one idea of many. Mm-hmm. But you can have Rusev attack Cena after the match.
And
so
build
you
it
have
from there. Yeah.
That set up.
Okay, so there are ways in which this could work. The way it won't work is if Rollins does nothing.
Right.
Which means he just does Lesnar will remain champion. Now, I still want Lesnar Bryan at WrestleMania. I don't care what anybody says now.
Yeah.
My mind's set on it. My heart is set on it. I want it. I paid for the ticket. I want my match, right?
I do too. I just feel skeptical we're going to get it.
Yeah. What else happened last week? Oh, yes.
Everyone's fired for us. They're gone. They're never coming back.
Never coming back. But
despite being advertised for the Rumble. Yeah. So.
And at this point, you fired your most popular babyface. I don't care what. They're going to still say Cena's the man, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Ziggler's the most popular guy on the roster right now, fan wise.
I don't know about that.
Maybe for us, but yeah.
Yeah, I think you're looking at it from a very IWC perspective.
Perhaps.
You know what? I just thought of something. What if the Rumble. That means Raw's really going to suck for the next 3 weeks, but what else is new?
2 weeks.
But I think at the Rumble, okay, 2 weeks. God, it's still two shitty Raws left.
Yeah, I know, don't.
But I think the theme of the Rumble is just going to be Triple H getting infuriated because these guys that he fired keep coming. They, like, return at the Rumble, and then first you have, like, Ryback come back, and there's kind of a pop. Then you have Rowan, then you have Ziggler. And then you have Orton, and that's like
Orton's the one, isn't it? Orton's the one that's going to launch it.
Yes, I think that'd be a good story.
That begs a question, though. And we've booked basically a little bit of Mania. We've booked Daniel Bryan versus John Cena. John Cena. Thank God we're not going to get that again. Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar.
Right.
We're assuming it's Triple H versus Sting, even though we want Sting Taker still. What the hell do you do with Randy Orton?
That's a great question.
Because we're assuming that Rollins is going to be in a title match with Reigns. We're assuming now.
I think if they do... Because
part of
Brock,
us still want Bryan to win the Rumble, right?
Yeah. If they do Brock and Bryan for the title, then... Because you're going in with the assumption that Bryan versus Brock is not going to be non-title.
Right.
I mean, I guess it
could be.
I guess. But let's assume that it is for the title. I think you could do Orton Rollins.
But then what do you do with Reigns?
Eh, fuck him. No, I don't know.
Come on, superstar of the year and all that. You got to do something with him.
I know, they like him a lot. I don't know what you would do with him. You could set something up for him.
Maybe, unless you make it a triple threat.
It would have to be for something.
Yeah, it would, but, you know.
I don't know. That's a good question.
If Rollins is in the title match, you could again have another triple threat and have Reigns, Orton, and Rollins in there.
Yeah, but I'm not a fan of doing a triple threat unless it's for something.
Like, that's what I'm saying, if Rollins is champion.
Then, yeah, I guess you could. And then you could do Bryan and Brock on the undercard.
On the undercard. You know, the middle of the show one?
Yeah.
Which means that card is going to be stacked, but yeah.
Maybe, yeah. That means, you know what? I'm liking this WrestleMania because there's options, which is cool.
Yes, there are options. However, they're not building to anything right now, and that's frustrating the hell out of everybody.
Yes, that I think they know where they're going, but they don't know when to start building it, which is very...
You know, the thing that's prolonging it is they don't know what the Undertaker status is at this point. They don't know whether he's going to perform or whether he's not.
If he's healthy and he wants to perform, then it's going to be Undertaker and Bray, which I'm not thrilled about. But it'll be the Undertaker showcase match and it'll be fine.
If he doesn't win, I'm going to be pissed.
Unless they start the gimmick that everyone's beating him.
I'm
going to
be so mad. Oh, I'll be so mad.
You know what I think they'll do? I think they'll do Rusev Reigns at Mania, and then they'll do Cena and...
Do you think the Reigns-Rusev thing would work, though?
Yes.
Really?
As long as you don't beat Rusev between now and Mania, yes. Because both guys have been booked...
Okay, look, I see where you're going with it, because someone needs to break that Rusev not being pinned and not being submitted thing, and who better than your superstar of the year?
Yeah, and Reigns has been booked... Also, as this, like, unstoppable force.
Yes. Yeah, that could work, but then what do you do with Cena? See? This is it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you could do something with Ambrose.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. It's interesting. I don't know
what
these things are.
Yeah, there's options. We always complain there are no options, but this year there are.
Also, you think Sheamus is back by Mania?
Yes, and they're planning to turn him heel. They've been saying that for a while now.
Yes. Just like they turned Bad News Barrett babyface for a week.
They turned him baby. He is Intercontinental Champion.
That he is.
For a fifth time. I'm not sad about this.
I'm not sad either. I think you'll get an Intercontinental title match.
You know, I'd actually like to see Bad News versus Sheamus, because that'll be a European style match and they'll kill each other.
Yeah.
Literally,
it's a match.
Kill each other.
That's one of the matches that they've done a million times and I'm still not tired of it. Because it's good every
time. It's fine.
Time.
It works. Because the European style is very hard-hitting and very... Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
Because they know each other
match.
Very well.
Yeah.
Add Cesaro into that mix and you can have a great triple threat. But anyway.
Oh, man. I think Cesaro's below the Intercontinental title at this point.
Oh, yeah. That's him. Okay. That's Raw done. Before we get to our special guest, you did something on Wednesday.
Yes, I did.
Which I thought you'd never ever do.
I'm ashamed. I'm going to say this one time and one time only. So listen up.
You got a heavy heart, Des.
Last Wednesday, out of boredom, out of curiosity, out of stupidity, I watched Impact. I did. It pains me to say. Yeah, I heard the world just stop and gasp collectively.
Now.
Somewhere in France, there's a blacksmith who just put down his chisel and he scratched his chin and didn't know why.
Sacre bleu!
That's why right there.
Yeah. Now.
But I did. And you know why?
I want you to quote Dixie Carter. What did she say the day before this ad?
This is actually why I tuned in, because Dixie Carter was on the Ross Report. And she said, well, tomorrow's show is going to be more of a wrestling show. We're not going to really start.
She makes it sound like a dirty word, doesn't it?
Yeah, she said it like she was disappointed. Said on a Friday, January 16th, when our regular time slot, that's when we're really going to start. Working the Impact magic.
Now, what did they do for the first 20 minutes?
They fought. For no reason. They just,
just to get into the building, which they had access to already.
I don't understand why. Like, they just fought for the sake of fighting. It reminded me of the Simpsons episodes where they're in the bar and he's just like,
hey, you,
that's
let's
fight.
Fight.
And he's like, them fighting words, boy. Start fighting. I love that.
Homer gets thrown out. He goes back in and gets thrown out every time. I love it. I'll show them.
So that's what this reminded me of.
Now, some things happened. Angle is no longer the authority.
Yeah, he relinquished his authority. They had like every title on the line.
We have new champions, correct?
Yeah, Austin Aries beat Loki for the title, and Bobby Roode lost, so Bobby Lashley's the champion again. Because for us,
Wasn't there plan to turn Lashley face?
I think they still will.
Okay.
But because it was the first show, they had to go in and do a swerve so that just in case you're a new viewer that's watching.
You think you're Impact watching WCW again?
That's watching Impact for the first time. TNA just told you without a shadow of a doubt that they are a shitty product.
Now, so much for setting the reset button. We think, you know, new product, a new channel, new product, new everything. You're not going to do the same tired gimmicks.
That's what I'm saying. If you want to make a new splash on this new network, regardless of how insignificant it is, all right, come in and make a refreshing impression.
You know, the person you've got to impress is people like Dez, who is a wrestling fan.
Come in, do new stuff, just do fresh matches. Instead, not only do we now get fresh matches, we get the convoluted same goddamn TNA convoluted finish MO that we always get in their main events.
So basically, Eric Young turned heel, correct?
Well, you had, at the beginning of the show, you had MVP and Bobby Lashley teasing dissension. And then at the end, he helps him win the goddamn title back. And then, as if that wasn't enough, then you have Eric Young come out and turn on his goddamn best friend for no goddamn reason. Tired of this shit.
In the middle of this, you've got James Storm pretending to be Bray Wyatt, but doing a better job of being Bray Wyatt.
Yeah. So give this company a goddamn chance, and they go and they say, we're going to do new things. And their idea of a new thing, their idea of a new refreshing angle is to create a wrestling faction. Low-key and Austin Aries joined, and they had fucking masks on. How is that refreshing? I saw this 2 years ago.
How many faces do we have in the company right now? Four.
We have four.
I'm counting. All right, we got Angle, the Hardys, minus Jeff, because we'll talk about that in a second, and potentially Bobby Lashley, and we've got Bobby Roode at the minute.
Oh, and Samoa Joe joined the faction, too, for no reason. There's no reason
What's
for
problem?
This.
Hang on a second. Oh. You know what? I want Samoa Joe to go back to the indies. I miss Samoa Joe in the indies. Sorry.
They didn't even explain why.
He needs a renaissance like AJ does. Honestly, he does.
Samoa Joe wasn't even on the show until
he joined this faction.
This heel group. It makes no sense. Hate this show.
Right. Let's talk about care. And this is all to build to lockdown, by the way. Which they've taken
I don't care what
for.
Channel it's on. I don't care what channel it's on. This is a shitty show. I'm not having fun anymore.
I don't think you ever were, to be fair, with that company. Now,
I was having fun doing the podcast until now.
Let's talk about something a little bit more interesting, a little bit more dangerous.
Something they'll yell about less?
Yeah, something that I'm a little bit more animated about. They taped Lockdown. And obviously the point of Lockdown is to have cage matches.
For some reason.
For some reason.
Because TNA's all about doing goddamn gimmick matches that don't make sense and don't get built up properly. Go on.
Now, the Hardys, who are known for ladder matches, correct?
Yes.
I think people forget that they've also done a fair few steel cage matches in their time.
They're known for jumping off of shit.
One Hardy in particular. Sure. Matthew is a little bit more sensible.
Good.
One of them needs to be. Congratulations to Matt Hardy. Him and his wife are expecting, by the way.
Yay! I don't have the button right now.
I know. But Jeff Hardy took a ridiculous risky bump.
I don't know if he bumped or he fell.
People are saying it's a bump. Some people are saying he fell. Either way, he smashed his head on the steel steps.
That sucks.
Not meant to happen.
Yeah, that's not a thing that should happen a lot or ever.
Now, Jeff Hardy isn't the Jeff Hardy of 5-6 years ago where he needs to be taking these risks. He's 36 years old.
Right.
He's got a wife and a daughter. I don't care whether he's taking 2 months off, a month off because they go into the UK and he's not allowed to go. Fact still remains.
Right.
If he's taking a bump off a cage and he hits his head on the steel steps, nix the angle and don't have Storm beat the crap out of him.
Well, my
And I think you were making
is,
the point to me off air that he might be a little bit too proud.
Jeff Hardy is crazy. I get that.
Well, yes.
But he's still professional.
We know he's crazy because his number one memory of being in Impact Wrestling is him jumping off the freaking Titantron.
Yeah. Well, he's crazy, but he's a professional. And I think Jeff Hardy is professional, even if he did get hurt like that. What to say? And again, we don't know if he's actually hurt. I think he goes in for testing this week.
He is going in for testing this week, yeah.
But I think he would still want to go through with the angle. It's business. And I think he would tell James Storm, you know, if that happens, let's do the angle. I mean, maybe don't lay him in as much, but let's at least give the announcers and the audience something to work with so that we can come back and do business like we planned.
I guess. And we still don't know his contract situation as of yet. His contract
That's
is due.
True. I think he'll resign.
I'm assuming he's going to resign.
If I were Jeff, I'd resign. It's an
just
easy job.
Just for a lighter schedule. I think he enjoys a lighter schedule. And I think that if Triple H wanted to rehire him, granted, he won't be the biggest star that he was in 2009 because he was the biggest babyface in the world.
He was. And you know what? I don't think Triple H would deny that.
No, Triple H is very sensitive. You know what? He put Jeff over three times in his career.
Yes, he did.
So he knows. So, but Jeff will want a Rob Van Dam / Chris Jericho schedule. And I think at Jeff's age, Triple H will want a little bit more.
Hmm.
So I don't think he's going to re-sign, personally. Although I'd love him to have one more run in the WWE. Just for my own personal satisfaction. You know, again,
sure.
Selfish motives. But I think he's happy in TNA.
If I brought Jeff back to WWE, I would actually insist on the lighter schedule because
he's prone to burnout, isn't he?
I think Jeff Hardy's that too, but also I think Jeff Hardy's main event days are behind him. I think he can still do spectacular things, but I think he's at that point now. He's got to use those spectacular things to get people over, not to get himself over.
He's over enough as he's going to get. The fans are going to love him regardless.
If I use Jeff Hardy, I would have him do those really good mid-card matches that you can always count on, the stuff that Jericho was doing, stuff that Van Damme was trying to do when he came back last.
And he can't do it.
And I would particularly use Jeff Hardy as a guy who can go down to NXT and work with guys like Adrian Neville, guys like Sami Zayn, get a great match out of him. I think that's his best use at this point.
And it would increase Adrian Neville and Sami Zayn's profile if you use Jeff Hardy in that way. I completely agree with you. And you're right. He is prone to, and I said it, he's prone to burnout. The 2000 to 2000 and the 99 to 2002 run says as much because he was on a ridiculous schedule.
You did some stats last night on this.
Yeah, I did. I was kind of watching the ladder match DVDs just because I like the ladder match concept. At the beginning, right. I did anyway, not so much anymore. And in a period of 4 or 5 years, Jeff Hardy had some ridiculous number of matches. I counted the No Mercy match at 99 with Edge and Christian. Des, can you count these for me on the while I do this? So we can do this
Go
properly.
For it.
So we had the No Mercy match at 99 in November. Then we had the WrestleMania 2000 triangle ladder match in March/April. I think it was April.
Yeah.
SummerSlam TLC 1. Okay. Then you had a ladder match on Raw the night after they killed themselves in a steel cage match in September.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. That should count as two.
Right. So then you had TLC 2 at WrestleMania 17, TLC 3 in May, right? That's on SmackDown.
Right.
You had
right.
a ladder match with RVD for the hardcore title, and you'd know that must have been ridiculous
that's
in
really
August
stupid.
At SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Then he takes a little bit of time off, obviously, for ladder match. Then he has one with The Undertaker, right? That's in, what, July of 2002, whatever.
Which is not a smart thing.
And he's had steel cage matches in between, by the way. So I'm not, and a couple of table matches.
So that's 9. And that's just not counting the steel cage matches or tables.
Not counting the steel cage matches and the tables matches that he's had. And he had a little bit of a run with a hardcore title too.
So Burnout City.
Yeah, I think now we appreciate why he went down the road he went down.
He broke in at a very inopportune time. It was opportune for him, obviously.
It was opportune for both the Hardys. They got over.
Body.
It was a fan thing that helped them get over, didn't it?
Sure. And they did very spectacular stuff, which at that point was very new and fresh.
And innovative, yes. There was no way you hadn't seen a tag team ladder match, let alone a triangle ladder match.
Yeah, that was insane. And then you brought tables and chairs into things, and they went as far as they could go, man.
And okay, and at least Edge and Christian kind of broke off in the middle because they went on a singles run. Yeah. Matt and Jeff especially was doing this constantly because it was his speciality, and they kept pushing it and pushing it, and then he broke.
We'll see what happens.
I'm gonna try kind of finding little stats like that every so often for a topic that we touch on.
The week.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I'm very excited to get to this interview for us.
Me too, man. Because we have done we've done some wonderful interviews. Greg Lambert comes to mind always.
Yeah.
Ivan Koloff was fun in the summer, but this is something very special.
Been wanting to get this guy on the show for like 2 years, maybe longer, ever since he left wrestling to talk about his last documentary. So we got Nigel McGuinness on the program to talk about his LA Fights Kickstarter, the new alternative in professional wrestling that Nigel's proposing. LAFights.com if you want to support the project. And we're talking to Nigel about that, the state of professional wrestling, his career, all sorts of really fun stuff. Nigel McGuinness is here, one of my favorite wrestlers. This is the guy, and Faraz can attest to this, Nigel is one of the guy that solidified my fandom for professional wrestling. I had been watching, you know, a little bit of WWE and stuff, but then I watched Nigel just wrestling all these guys during his ROH title run, and that was pretty much what said, Dez, you are a wrestling fan for life. And now he's here on the podcast talking about his new project on Kickstarter, LA Fights. Nigel McGuinness, welcome to the show. It's great to have you, sir.
Great to be here, Dez. Thank you very much. It's a very, very kind introduction. Appreciate that.
Now, I want to, before we talk about the project and the idea for this cool new TV show, I had to bring something up to you because I was Googling your name this morning just in case there was a tidbit of information that I may have missed about you. And first of all, have you Googled yourself lately?
No.
Well, I have a treat for you. I looked you up, and Google likes to show like the list of movies and TV shows that you've appeared in, and so it has things like, you know, Ring of Honor TV and Impact Wrestling and things like that. And at the very bottom, as if trying to hide, is a credit for Puppet Master 10.
There you go.
How did you get involved with that? I that's one of those cult things that I loved as a kid.
How did I get involved in that? Likely I can't remember. I've got friends who are sort of big into the Full Moon sort of stuff. A buddy called Tim Chisma, who's a producer out here. He may have hooked me up with an audition or something like that. When I first got out here to LA, like most people, I sort of, you know, dipped my toe in the acting water and, you know, I may have even got it off of Actors Access. I can't really remember to tell them for the life of me, but it was an interesting day or night, as it was, on set, and it was fun, you know.
Well, regardless, it was a treat for me. It popped me for sure. It was just wow, that's awesome. But you've done some acting stuff in the past, and of course you've paved quite the wrestling legacy for yourself as well. And I think both of these things are sort of coming together as one now, as part of LA Fights, the Kickstarter project that Nigel is talking about today. And of course, you can go to LAFights.com if you want to back the project. But Nigel, LA Fights, tell us a little bit about how LA Fights is looking to bridge the gap between professional wrestling and more mainstream television.
Well, really, I've kind of looked at what does the best numbers in the entertainment world today and tried to sort of evolve pro wrestling, taking that into account, because I think, you know, we get our content in a different way nowadays than we did 10 or 15 years ago. We like to binge watch series on Netflix and Hulu and platforms like that. And we like having a beginning and a middle and end of things necessarily. It's not me who just said this isn't the first idea that I've had. I mean, a lot of people have thought, why can't wrestling have more of a seasonal structure? And the difficulty with that, of course, is that a company like WWE has to produce 52 weeks of TV a year to be able to put out as much advertising to make the money back, et cetera, et cetera. So you really need a blank slate to start again to produce a show like this. And so, you know, I'm a big fan of shows like Breaking Bad or The Office. And I thought, you know, what can I learn from these sort of shows that can be adapted with pro wrestling? And so I sort of, you know, about 18 months ago, I started writing an idea of how to develop this, knowing that it would have to be on a limited budget as well. Not only developing the storylines and behind the scenes and the structure, but also developing the in-ring style, because I believe that with the advent and the popularity of MMA, that people, you know, really need a new product that is more believable than the stereotypical WWE in-ring product as it exists at the moment. Now, what they do works perfectly well for their audience and their demographic. And, you know, again, this isn't competition. I'm just showing that there is a huge gap in the market for a more adult product, with a more believable in-ring style that will appeal not only to pro wrestling fans that have stopped watching WWE, but also to MMA fans that want to see more of a scripted version of what they see for UFC.
Now, have you gotten a chance? I don't know how much you follow the product these days, but have you gotten a chance to watch the newest wrestling thing out there right now, Lucha Underground on the El Rey Network?
I haven't watched it. I know some people who have, some friends who have, and so obviously I've heard about it. I've been hearing good things about how it's been shot differently, and obviously it's a seasonal structure as well, which is a step towards what I'm proposing as well.
Yeah, I'm curious. Once you watch it, I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, because it's been getting some very positive reaction. Because it's different. And I think right. I think the key right now is to produce content that's different, but it's sure. still it's still primarily a wrestling based show. Do you? I mean, you're looking at doing more MMA, oriented stuff, but it's still pro wrestling. What? How mm-hmm. much of that are you planning on using? You know, established wrestlers, or is it going to be more of an actor type of thing?
It's an open, really. I mean, that's part of the whole casting process. There's 10 fighters ostensibly within the show, within the universe of LA Fights. And in an ideal world, I'd probably use largely pro wrestlers in that genre, but they have to A, be able to work this hybrid style I've envisioned. And they also have to be able to emote the sort of storylines that they're going to be playing the parts of. Now, obviously, I will help that in the sense that I'm not going to cast someone to play a role that they haven't experienced in their real life. And
sure.
that, again, is part of my theory of this evolution, is that we don't need to, nor were we able to, give professional wrestlers storylines which aren't themselves and expect them to pull them off. Therefore, but I do believe that pro wrestlers have backstories anyway themselves, you know, whether it's ambition versus family or sexuality or any of the different things that people deal with on you know, a weekly occasion. And if we can just sort of show that within the scripted universe, I think we're onto a winner.
The Kickstarter is at lafights.com. You can support it right now. You've got about 3 weeks left to back the project, and it's going into some good hands. Personally, I guarantee that after watching what Nigel did with his last Kickstarter project.
I concur.
Yeah, absolutely. Nigel, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about The Last of McGinnis, which was mm. your last documentary, and it profiled your basically what was being called your retirement tour. And first of all, I've never gotten a chance to tell you before, I've never, I think, in my life watched something involved, even with undertones of wrestling, that made me feel so emotional. I watch it today and I still get choked up at the end. I thought it was brilliant storytelling.
Thank you.
We're talking, I mean, how was the, I know you decided to go and try and tour that film and submit it to a couple festivals. Are you still working with film or is it available for people to purchase or what's the status?
Yeah, you can stream it instantly on nigelwrestling.com. You can also buy the hard DVD if you're interested in owning a copy yourself on the same place, nigelwrestling.com. But beyond that, I pretty much wash my hands of it essentially now. I'm looking for an outlet online, whether it's Netflix or Hulu or one of those sort of platforms to sort of, you know, give it its final resting place, so to speak. Sure. I've pretty much done everything else I can with it. And, you know, I learned a lot editing, obviously, in terms of making it. But as you said, in terms of telling a good story and in terms of understanding what people will get engaged by. And I'm obviously going to employ some of what I learned in terms of telling my own story in the LA Fight project.
Speaking on The Last of McGinnis, I just watched it again today, and I watched it when it first came out, and you can still to this day feel the raw emotion. Is that the point you want to get across? The absolute desolation of not being, you know, with the WWE, but still finding an outlet and seeing the fan support, especially in the UK. We love you over here. Personally, from a personal experience, when I first got into watching independent wrestling, you were the man to me. There was no one better.
Very kind of you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. As I said, you know, the storylines are there already. One of the storylines, if I, you know, get this funded on Kickstarter, I will be in front of the camera as well as behind it. And therefore, obviously, my storyline will be essentially my storyline about a guy that really never really made it to the level that he expected. And somehow was trying to come to terms with that. Within the storyline, obviously, it won't be a guy about who's retiring. Will be a guy that's pretty much unable to sort of give up because he's still, that carrot is still dangling there, not with WWE, but with the company that if they get picked up by a major TV channel, well, that's just really start making some money and get some fame and finally all the years of hard work will be worth it. But there are other storylines as well. I mean, you know, this is the thing with all these documentaries that have been about pro wrestling.
Right.
People are so engaged by it, yet we haven't seen these storylines play out in a scripted universe to any sort of extent, certainly not on a complex, genuine level. And so whether it's my issues or other people's issues with drug abuse and all that sort of stuff, it's all there. It's all open. You can just find somebody in some project to make it a reality. And that's exactly what I've done over the last 18 months. Instead of just talking about ideas or even worse, just talking about what's wrong with the current product, it's not about that at all. It's about saying, these are all the ideas that are out there. These are the ways we can change this to make it absolutely categorically new and exciting and different. Put it all together. What's it going to cost to make this a reality? This is how much it's going to cost. Do people care enough to put their hands in their pockets to make this a reality or not? And if they don't, it's not that big a deal. You know, it's not the end of the world. I've done a lot of the legwork so that we got to this stage. But this is market research, you know. And if the pro wrestling fan base that, you know, ostensibly complains about Raw every Monday night, if they want to see another mainstream product that can hopefully reinvigorate the industry, well, this is one of, perhaps, if not the only, opportunity for that to really happen across the board. I mean, because there are other products out there. You know, I think the New Japan show was absolutely awesome.
Yes.
I didn't see it myself. I mean, again, all I do is hear about what people talk about it online, you know. And if everybody online was saying how much they love WWE and this was the best pro wrestling in the world, then, you know what, I wouldn't even think about it necessarily. I'd go, you know what, everyone's happy with the product, but I hear people are unhappy. Therefore, if someone's unhappy, give them something else, and you would hope they'd get behind that. But the question really becomes now, in this day and age, but there's so many Kickstarters, there's so many other people asking for money, all these other things, you know, how many people are really willing to get behind it, and how important is it to them that they see a new product out there? And we will find out in about 3 weeks.
Now, the last McGinnis was about sort of saying farewell to professional wrestling in a very well done emotional way. And now this, are you planning on wrestling if LA Fights becomes a thing? And if you do plan on wrestling, how are you feeling right now physically?
100%. I mean, a little sore because I just got done with jiu-jitsu. But, you know, in terms of compared to how I used to be when I was wrestling, I mean, I'm feeling better than I felt in over a decade, you know. And part of me doesn't want to give that up. But again, part of the evolution of the in-ring style, I believe, is to get away from the bump-heavy product that exists today, not just because you don't want to bump so much, but because in real professional fights, you don't see people taking flat back bumps. It just doesn't happen. So, you know, the in-ring style, in my mind, will be a lot safer, matches will be shorter, and I think it'll be better for everybody involved. But really, you know, in terms of trying to get this funded through Kickstarter, I thought it needed a little bit of extra oomph to convince people to put their money in and get this, see this a reality. Because I had so many people saying, you know, we miss you and we'd love to see you back wrestling. When you come back, well, the reality was that there was nothing I could do in wrestling I hadn't done before outside of WWE. They weren't interested. You know, I've got to an age now where, you know, I don't want to go back on the road and wrestle for a company like Ring of Honor or anywhere else where I can't compete with the young guys that are going out there night sure. after night and just put on the best pro wrestling in the world. You know, I mean, Ring of Honor will always be a place for young guys who are really the epitome of the athleticism and the art form of pro wrestling. And, you know, I know I can't compete on that level with that style. So I've created a new style that, you know, I think will appeal not necessarily to a broader audience, but certainly I can do. And I think it will create one more opportunity, one more place for pro wrestlers to make a living. And that's what it's all about. You know, I mean, we really ostensibly only have one company in the world now where you can make enough money to retire right. and not have to work another job. And that's the reality of pro wrestling. And if you do it long enough, you're going to get injuries. And more importantly, you'll have no real life work experience to really get a regular job after the fact. So, you know, what I'm suggesting could be such a categorical change and improvement for the industry as a whole. I just don't know how many people really understand how big this could be if it's funded. It's not about me making money at right. all, because I won't make any money with it. The money I'm asking for is just essentially to get this made and me to pay my bills while I am spending 60 or 70 hours a week making this a reality. But beyond that, it's really about, you know, pushing forward the art form and showing what is possible within it. You know, and also, if you're this generation, like Jimmy Jacobs said, what will be this generation's stamp on professional wrestling? Will it be a generation that, you know, at least on a mainstream level with WWE, it was kind of business as usual? I don't know. You know, I know Dragon and Punk have, you know, really have tried to evolve things up there, but largely, by and large, on a mainstream level, people still aren't talking about it the way they were talking about it in the late 90s.
Right.
Fighting against that.
So you mentioned, you know, the Ring of Honor, and you're still an on-screen figure on there, but you're not wrestling. I believe it was in 2013. I think everyone except people in Ring of Honor, but every fan watching was pretty much certain that you were going to do one more match with Steve Corino. And just the way they built it up on TV and the way they portrayed you and him having that rivalry. And now you guys are announcing together. But at that point, it was pretty much certain that you guys were going to have a match. Was there ever a plan to go ahead and do that match, or was it always no?
Absolutely not. When I first came back to Ring of Honor and I started doing the commentary there originally, I said to Delirious, I said, look, you know, I'm done with wrestling. I have no interest in it whatsoever. You know, I'd love to be able to come back and be a part of the company, but you know, there's no way I'm going to be wrestling anymore. It's just, I'm one of these people that I really believe in somebody's word. Their word is their bond. And if somebody says something and they go back on what they've said, then, you know, I think you have to question what they say in the future. And I said that match with Dragon was my last match in Ring of Honor, and I meant it. And, you know, plenty of people have come to me and said, one more match, you know, I'd love to do this, and I think we could do this, and yada, yada, yada. And it just, nothing to me would be worth adding to the legacy that I've already created, because, you know, I just don't feel like I can compete on that level. And it's not worth it to me, you know. I love Ring of Honor, and I believe those spots should be for the young guys who can come up and really do something.
How was it for you transitioning from wrestler to announcer? I mean, did you find it difficult?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't easy straight away. It's we were first there, we were taping those at the OVW, and it was kind of awkward because the chairs that we were sat in at the time were kind of like at a different level, and so when they shot me, I was all hunched over. And just, you know, if it's something you've done for the first time, it is difficult. But thankfully, having Kevin there beside me, helping me out, and also having Jim Cornette in my ear producing me was a great help. And after a while, I started to think, you know, much like with stand-up comedy, how you got to find your voice, you know, find what it is you can contribute to the product because of your experience. And, you know, after a month or two, I really felt like we were doing well as a team. So I was really happy in that spot.
How was it 6 months in, you're announcing, you're in Florida, and you call what ends up being a 5-star match, and a lot of the, I mean, obviously Elgin and Richards were excellent, but a lot of the praise was given to you for how you were able to tell the story of the match, and which is something that announcers that have been doing it for sometimes 10, 15 years sometimes aren't able to do. You were able to do that in 6 months. How was that for you, and looking back at all the praise you got for that match?
It was great, you know. I mean, it was really great, and I really felt like, wow, this is something that perhaps I could carry on doing for the rest of my career, you know. I remember a lot of people within the industry sort of saying, wow, you've really found your voice, and you've really done well here, and this would be great, this would be awesome, you know. So yeah, I was really happy with it.
The Kickstarter is LA Fights. You can support it right now at LAFights.com. You have a little under 3 weeks to do that. You can get your money in. You can make this thing a reality. It looks super interesting. And as a consumer, it's our responsibility to vote with our wallets. And that's exactly what we need to do for things like this and for Kickstarter in general. I had a question about, I'm a big follower of crowdfunding. I love the concept, and I think it's just great. Your last project, Last of McGinnis, was also supported by crowdfunding. Have you noticed a change in the crowdfunding market over the last couple of years? Maybe it's
huge,
become a little
change.
More,
absolutely.
Yeah, a little more saturated.
You could certainly argue and say that crowdfunding, more ostensibly Kickstarter, has jumped the shark in that regard, because so many people have gone on there and put projects up there. I was looking. I've actually spent the last 3 weeks emailing every single person who backed my first project, thanking them, and also telling them more about this new project. Because, you know, we live in this bubble to where we think if we tweet something out or post it a couple of times on Facebook, everybody will hear about it. But I've been doing this daily for the last 3 weeks. People still aren't hearing about it, you know. So that's why I'm doing so many interviews, and that's why I'm emailing everybody individually to back the project. And in doing so, getting emails from the first Kickstarter, I'd seen a lot of people that first backed me then went on and backed other projects as well.
Right.
Now, I don't know this for a fact. I have no idea whatsoever. But my theory, and from hearing a lot of people who are talking about it, is that perhaps they backed other projects that either A, didn't live up to their expectations, or B, they never saw a finished product for whatsoever. And because of that, they're cautious putting money into something that is another project. Even though they were very happy with my project and they have faith in me, you know what it's like human beings, and I get it, and I understand completely. Once you're burnt with one avenue, kind of the same in pro wrestling, I think, that people who have been turned off by WWE, for whatever reason, now just go, you know what, I'm not interested in pro wrestling anymore. Even though there are great other pro wrestling products out there, sometimes people just don't care, and they just move on, and life's too short to worry about it, you know? And so I'm definitely dealing with that. There's no doubt about it. I had over 1,000 people donate for the Kickstarter thing for my documentary. And obviously, you know, it was a different project. I had the footage already. I could cut together these trailers that were very sort of endearing. We right. drew people in. You could sort of understand the emotion that was going into it. I don't have much for this. All I have is a pitch. But what I'm trying to do is far more important in my mind and could have a far bigger influence on the industry. Therefore, if you are a fan, in my mind, this project's far more important. I mean, whether Nigel McGuinness gets to tell his life is neither here nor there, but certainly compared to influence of the company. Now, you imagine the influence of ECW and the attitude. Imagine if that had never happened, what would happen to pro wrestling? This is what I'm trying to do here, is to really show what else is possible within the genre. And to do that, I really need people's help. But as we said, you know, with a documentary, anybody who was in pro, a lot of my friends who were in WWE, et cetera, et cetera, could tweet about it, and they could say, support Nigel McGuinness's Kickstarter for his documentary. It's a great story to be told. He's a great guy, blah, blah, blah. But now, even though I positioned this as not a petition, because it really isn't, it's a TV show, it's not a promotion in any way, shape, or form, even that being that the case, anybody that works for WWE or TNA obviously really can't touch it, because unfortunately within pro wrestling, we have this notion, and I don't understand it whatsoever, but we have this notion that if we talk publicly about any other professional wrestling organization, then people with our own current organization sort of think that that's a bad thing, and we're somehow downplaying the company that we're in. And if you work for TNA, if you work for WWE, you have to say, this is the best company in the world.
Yeah.
Everything we do is perfect, and it's awesome, and we're going to knock it out of the park, and we're going to rewrite. And I don't get it, because I think it's hyperbole, and I think the fans don't buy it either. And perhaps that's why when you say it, you see it again and again and again, time and time again, that people just tune out, you know, and perhaps I'm going the wrong way about it. I don't know, but I said that, you know, you can't save your ass and yes at the same time. A very good friend told me that once, and I believe that you've got to be open, you've got to be transparent. I know my project isn't perfect necessarily, but I know that it's different enough and it's evolutionary enough that it really can show people what else is possible in the genre and inspire a complete invigoration of the industry.
It's interesting you bring up that sort of bubble syndrome in professional wrestling. I noticed it just the other day. I was watching the New Japan, the English broadcast, and Jim Ross and Matt Stryker were not only openly talking about other promotions, but they were acknowledging promotions and putting, and, you know, praising promotions like Ring of Honor and PWG and WWE.
Yeah.
It was very weird to hear, because that's a strange thing that people don't really do anymore. But
refreshing, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's strange. But my question is, and I know you didn't get a chance to watch the show yet, but there was one thing, and I thought I should ask Nigel about this, because there was a match on the show. And the entire match was built around a concussion, and in the Japanese style, they're not shy about taking shots to the head and doing very reckless things. What's your thoughts on actually taking something serious like concussions? And this isn't just Japan; they do it in WWE too. Taking something serious like concussions and turning it into a wrestling angle. Do you think that's something that should still be done in 2015 or is
absolutely,
it
so, absolutely. Yeah. The more you can raise attention to concussions, as long as it's dealt in the right way. I mean, if you tell a storyline where people are being a pussy for taking time off for a concussion, then obviously not. But if you tell a story where somebody can't defend because they have a concussion, even if it's storyline, all the better, then people will start to understand and appreciate that, you know, we're not machines, we're not animals that just have to perform until we can no longer perform, that, you know, it's okay. I mean, Christ, in football we're seeing it now, certainly in MMA and sports in general. If you have an injury, you take time off, you know, and in pro wrestling, for the longest time it was never the case, and I think we should fully applaud it, you know?
The Kickstarter, LA Fights, is... One particularly interesting thing is you promise multidimensional characters, not the traditional thing of baby faces and heels. Do you think that dynamic of baby face and heel, do you think in 2015 that's officially passé, and what needs to change in wrestling?
I remember Vince McMahon talking about Shades of Grey in 1998.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yet here we are almost 20 years later. And I still hear people talking about baby faces and heels. And I still hear people saying, well, he's a baby face. Why did he, you know, go to the ropes? Or he's a heel. Therefore, he has to cheat to get the upper hand. Yeah, and I get the basic psychology of a match. Don't get me wrong. And I understand it.
Sure.
But it is one story. It is one story. And to a certain extent, it is sophomoric. And no one would watch movies. No one would watch TV if every storyline involved a good guy who never cheated. And a bad guy who always cheated. And I think that there is absolutely a place for a product. And in fact, you can make a very good argument that within pro wrestling on every level, that people should be closer towards this. I mean, WWE has a demographic that perhaps is more in tune to that version of baby faces and heels, which is kind of ironic given the fact that Vince was the first person, at least on a mainstream level, to talk about, you know, Shades of Grey, and with Vince McMahon and Steve Austin, you know, not necessarily having stereotypical baby face. But that's because they know what their demographic is and they're appealing to that, and that's fair enough. Good for them. But outside of that, absolutely. And I think, you know, even within Ring of Honor, I think that they're doing a lot of that sort of thing. The angle we just did with Tommaso Ciampa.
Right.
You know, where we said no, zero tolerance if he hits a referee, and he actually hit the referee, but it was by accident. You know, we're starting to see here, that sort of, that melding between baby faces and heels. And to me, when I hear people talking about baby faces and heels, I just don't get it. I don't really understand it anymore. There's any place for it. I mean, I guess, you know, if you need to place labels on the guy who's liked and the guy who's disliked, then fair enough. But to say that someone should act accordingly, I think is, certainly rather disingenuous in today's world.
Yeah. Couple quick questions here for you. You spent some time in TNA and, obviously working under a different name, but still very much your character and doing your moves and stuff. Do you have any highlights from working over there? And I don't know how well you're following the product now, but your thoughts on where they are right now compared to where they were when you were working there?
Wrestling Kurt Angle was, if not the, certainly one of the highlights of my career. One of the reasons I always felt such a disappointment with not getting to WWE was there were so many talented guys that I watched and admired growing up that were there that I would have loved to wrestle, and I never got a chance. So the fact to be in the ring with a guy like Kurt Angle, who, if he's not the best wrestler of my generation, certainly one of them, was huge, and certainly the pinnacle of my career creatively on a mainstream level. But then after that, obviously, there was a very negative stuff that happened from,
right,
you know, not getting the push that I felt like I deserved or should have done. And obviously getting hepatitis and not being used when people have said other things. But there is, you know, I'm not one of these people who like to talk about the negative things, and
sure,
that happens to everybody, you know. I mean, unfortunately, you know, if TNA doesn't last much longer, it will be looked at largely as the company that really was the graveyard for a lot of people's careers. Unfortunately, you know, when you had guys like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe and Christopher, yeah, Daniels, who were really the cream of the crop of the independents, and instead of making them the figureheads and the number one guys in your company, instead of always sort of having them playing second fiddle to guys who already had names, I mean, I get it. You know, it kind of worked in the past, and that was their theory, but they kept going back to it, and it never worked. It never really got over on that sort of level. So, you know, that's the reality of it. Again, I'm not really here to talk about negative things. I'm here to talk about positive things.
Sure.
With the new project. But where they are now, I mean, I think they are trying to go into that direction that I talked about. Is it too little too late? I don't know. They're on a smaller channel now. They're available in less homes than Ring of Honor. It's going to be difficult for them to keep traction, but who knows? You know, if they can get a product which is different enough and entertaining enough, then I truly believe people will find it in this day and age. But It's a hard road to hoe, and it's going to be a difficult road for them to do. But I know that, you know, some of the guys involved who are wrestling and some of the guys running behind the scenes are very talented. If they have the ability to really do what they want to do, then they certainly could do well.
Going back to the Kurt Angle feud, it was potentially one of my feud of the year. There were two matches that stood out in 2009 for me: Shawn Michaels' Undertaker at WrestleMania 25, and then you completely, again, blew me away. And you said it was like a dream come true, wrestling Kurt Angle. But for you, coming from the independents, what's it like being in front of the Impact Zone in front of that live? It's a completely different arena, isn't it? From the
It is a very different arena. And I wrestled a dark match for the WWE, and it was completely different to that as well. I mean, the feeling for WWE, and I only did that one match, It was night and day from anything I'd done before. I mean, the sound of a crowd that big. I mean, it's just easy. It's so easy. And maybe I'll get heat for saying that, but other people who've worked with WWE and Ring of Honor have said the same sort of thing. You know, I mean, like you give someone a heat toss and the place comes unglued. And you know, you give someone a heat toss in Ring of Honor and people are still like, you know, texting. It's like, yeah. You know, that's the reality of it. If you can get over in Ring of Honor, you can get over anywhere. TNA was kind of somewhere in between, you know. I mean, it was a hot crowd for the most part. It was national TV, but it was certainly noticeably smaller than the match I had for WWE. Now, when I wrestled Kurt Angle in on the European tour, that was just like WWE. It was fucking awesome. I mean, I absolutely loved that. You know, we went out there. We did 6 or 7 minutes. Didn't reinvent the wheel. Nice and basic. Nice and easy. Didn't even need to call anything in the back. And, you know, oh, wow. Place came unglued. It was absolute, it was everything I dreamed of. You know, it really was. Yeah, for me, I mean, I wasn't nervous because I knew Kurt Angle was good. And more importantly, I felt I'd earned that spot and I felt that I was good enough to perform in that position. And I, you know, all modesty aside, I think I proved that.
Nigel McGuinness has an incredible legacy under his belt in professional wrestling. And I fully believe that he understands how to make wrestling fun. And if you want to see that for yourself, well, then I invite you to head over to LAFights.com, support the Kickstarter project, and make sure this first season gets made. Nigel wrote it himself. He put it together. He put the budget together. He knows what he's doing. And Nigel, I got to tell you, you sat down and you painstakingly edited your documentary. Now you're putting this out. You've written the scripts. You're putting all this together. You've got quite the future ahead of you in show business.
But you know, I mean, really, a lot of it comes down to whether this gets funded or not. Because if it doesn't get funded and it doesn't get made, then you know, I'm essentially back to square one. There are other options and other avenues, but. I mean, let me ask you guys, what do you think is stopping people from backing the project? I mean, if you speak even from personal experience, what do you feel is the issue for a lot of people? I mean, because I had 1,000 people sure. back the Kickstarter project for my documentary. I'm now at 200, close to 300 for LA Fights. What do you think the issue is?
Honestly, I think it's oversaturation for crowdfunding. When you first put out the Last of McGuinness Kickstarter, people really wanted to see what you were up to. You had kind of had like a radio silence after you left TNA. And second, I think your project was the first wrestling project that I heard of that was on Kickstarter. And right. Ever since then, everyone's on Indiegogo, everyone's on Kickstarter. I have friends who are on Kickstarter funding student films, which is all great and nice. But then you also have people who are abusing Kickstarter. I don't know if you saw that potato salad Kickstarter. yeah, there's just a lot of saturation. But I think as the wrestling fans continue to hear about it, I think the results will improve. I've noticed too, not to talk too much about it, but I've noticed too, a lot of the Kickstarter activity, it usually goes way up the last week or so. People feel driven like, oh, I should really donate now because they like to put it off. And it's one of those procrastination things.
I think it's also a matter of trust.
Yes, right, exactly. Yeah. I know. And like I said, I mentioned before about other Kickstarter projects that kind of maybe burn people out on the idea.
Sure.
But unfortunately, the trouble is that if it gets towards the last week when people start putting money in, if we're still so far away from the actual figure, then, you know, there's very little hope. You know, that's why I keep trying to implore people to put the money in now, and we will encourage other people to do so as well. You know, we're nearly 50 grand, which is no small feat, you know, but it's still a long way from the 370 that we need.
Well, jump on that. There's some really cool prizes as well that you can get if you fund. LAFights.com is the place to go. Nigel, real quick, just because I'm interested in this. I knew a couple years ago you were pursuing stand-up comedy. Are you still doing that now that you're living in LA?
I just, after I came out here and did that I tried my hand at it for a few months and stuff and realized, much like with wrestling, it's something you have to commit yourself fully to and get up 5 or 6 times a week. And yeah. I just didn't have the time with the documentary. Once I started making the documentary, that took all of my time, you know, and so... I just never really got back into it. I mean, that's the reality is now, I over the last 18 months, I've been focusing fully on developing this concept and this project.
Well, the LAFights.com is where you can go to support the project and make sure you can see what could potentially be the next level of professional wrestling. Business and sports and especially entertainment is all about evolving. This is the next evolution, LAFights.com. Nigel McGuinness, it's been awesome speaking with you. Thank you so much for doing the show and best of luck to you.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate your time.
Nigel McGuinness, I hope we have on the show 1,000 more times. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Really enjoyed it. He's such a talent. It's just one of the things where you wish you saw him in the WWE.
He's great. Yeah. And he has ideas, which is the best part. He's not distancing himself from wrestling. He wants to actively help his friends and just do stuff for the betterment of the business.
It's nice when you hear someone so passionate about the business that they grew up in and kind of grew up wanting to be in. Some people get burnt out on it. We were talking about Jeff earlier, but yeah, Nigel hasn't.
So we're going to wrap things up. Remember, we're on Twitter at Desi Delgadillo at The Wisp. But if this week you feel
you
like
wanted to
there's
do some
something,
shopping.
Yeah, there's something missing in your life, perhaps, and you don't feel like putting pants on and going to the store.
Why would you want to do that?
Why do you want to do that? You've got a phone, you've got a computer, you've got an iPad, you've got a tablet,
you've got an iPhone.
You've got all sorts of equipment that you can use, and you can go to Things Des Says for Things.
Hang on, you can go to thingsdezsays.net. He knows his own name, I promise.
I know the title of my own website.
Yeah, he knows his title, yeah. Thingsdezsays.net, and there's a link just at the bottom of this, you know, description of the podcast. And it always says, click here!
Click here!
And then when you do click there, it'll take you to the Amazon.com that you know and love.
Yeah!
And you know what? It's a DVD that I don't recommend highly enough. Go and buy Shawn Michaels' Heartbreak and Triumph DVD, which, by the way, is up on the network this week.
Oh.
The documentary. But go and buy the DVD.
Because
it's one of my favorites, actually.
Extra matches.
Yes, extra matches. You will even get that awesome John Cena Shawn Michaels match from London.
Ooh.
An hour of TV time. And you'll also get my favorite Royal Rumble match ever, the Rockers versus the Orient Express. Love it.
I've still never seen that match.
Great match. Go and look it up on the network.
Go find it. Go to Amazon.com. Do it, man. And also,
now, if you've been following me on Twitter, you might be wondering what the hell I'm talking about at certain points. I've been putting out some spoilers.
Yes.
Discreet spoilers.
There's some breadcrumbs scattered along your Twitter timeline about what we might be talking about on Thursday's Throwback Vibes.
Yes.
Mystery. Intrigue.
Mystery again. Okay. we'll be using our 1920s voices, perhaps.
That's right. Perhaps you might hear some 1920s voices. Perhaps not.
We're not going to reveal it.
Thursday is the first Throwback Vibes of the year. So tune in. We've gotten through 1998. We're not doing another year at this point.
No, I don't think we're ever going to do another year again.
No, it was a good concept, but I hated life at the end of it.
We all hated life at the end of it. I got ill, Des.
That's true, you did. It made you sick. And you weren't even watching a bad product.
Well,
it was questionable.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're out of here. Thank you to Nigel McGuinness. Go to LAFights.com, support his project, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a review and tell us how much you like us. And if you want to make me a t-shirt, let me know, because I would love that.
You know what? If you want to make us t-shirts for WrestleMania, do it. We'll wear them.
Yeah. I have ideas that I want made into t-shirts. If you make t-shirts, send me an email.
Des@thingsdesays.net.
Yeah, des@thingsdesays.net. Send me the email, because I've been looking for a t-shirt guy for a while.
Are you going to have a piss-off t-shirt?
That is the first t-shirt. Because if you don't wear that t-shirt, well, then Faraz has got two words for you.
Piss off.